cliffcentral.com.
It's time for another episode of This Is Us, and at 7:30 on a Tuesday, this is what we do. And we are joined by Yatish Nasi alongside Lebang Khosana. And we're going to have some real positive conversations in this space, which are solution-based. We want to answer the questions about what we can all do to make South Africa a better place. So, Lebang, we're in day 13 of 16 days of activism. What does that mean to you? And what does it mean to you, Yatish? And then you can intro our guest in a minute and tell us how TIRS, the TIRS Foundation, has so much to tell us and teach us this morning. First of all, Lebang, you're the woman. Gender-based violence is always like profiled as this woman's issue. It's not a woman's issue, but you go first. Yeah. You go first.
Yeah, so I mean, every year, 25th of November, we see people rally together and start putting on their army gear and say, oh no, GBV is so bad, GBV is this, GBV is that. Whereas the real issue is that this is not just something that happens or should be spoken about in this time of year. It's a forever thing, particularly in South Africa. I mean, we live in a country where GBV is in itself a pandemic. And I think after lockdown, it just got so much worse for women, especially for children, especially. So, you know, it's nice that we can speak about this, but I'm more concerned with speaking to the people that are living it every single day, 365 days, and not just when it's time to speak about it. So that's why we're having Mara Dlenni. She's obviously the founder and director of the TIRS Foundation. And this is exactly what they do. They don't just speak about it when everybody's speaking about it. It's literally like it's in the core of what they do at TIRS Foundation. So again, one of the things that makes them particularly stand out for me is that they're not saying, oh no, we've got GBV as an issue. Women, let's do something. This is a conversation for all South Africans. It's for men. It's for women. It is for all of us to really, you know, to unpack. And it will get uncomfortable. I mean, it's not easy to sit and speak these hardcore facts and really be present, but it has to happen. These conversations need to happen. So, yeah. Hi, Marie.
Mara, it's good to have you on. Thanks for joining us this morning. And I'll ask you in a moment to tell us about the TIRS Foundation. Perhaps I should just give the intro here in terms of the basic stuff, because you probably, you know, it speaks for itself from your point of view. But you guys provide access to crisis intervention, advocacy counseling, and prevention education services for those who are impacted by domestic violence, sexual assault, child sexual abuse. This is tough stuff and not the kind of thing that people love talking about, but you've made it your life. Tell us a little bit about you, how you got involved in this. We just got to, I think you're on mute, or we can't hear you there, Mara. Just see if you can get your, I can't hear you. There we go. Talk to me now. Nope, still not working. Do you want to? Yeah, go off and come back on, and then we'll get you back in. I think I'm going to let you go out, and then I'll kick her out, and she can come back. Yeah, Tish, while we're waiting for her to come back, your feelings on 16 days of activism? What's your overwhelming feeling about this?
Yeah, you know, same thing. It's especially, I suppose, with the way the country is at the moment. I haven't even seen or heard much about it in these last couple of days. It's just, it seemed to, you know, other years it's probably more prevalent. But this year there just hasn't been enough attention, right? I think everyone's back so burner. Caught up in, yeah, it's back burner. There's just so much else going on. And that's probably the danger at the moment. So much in South Africa, right? There's so much on the back burner because all that's on the headlines, I guess, rightfully so, is fourth wave, other things going on. Mm-hmm. And to Lebang's point, you know, it probably got worse during lockdown. So this is just another one of those issues that is really, really forgotten. And me personally, you know, because it doesn't touch me on the sort of daily, it's not something that I'm close to or experience like so many South Africans. We tend to forget about it, myself included. I must be very honest. You know, when I hear about 16 days, I go, oh, yes, I remember that. But in my daily, it's hard for me to think about it, which is scary.
Let's see if we can get Mara back on. Hey, Mara. No, still can't hear you. Don't know what's going on there. Have you got something plugged in, like a microphone or something? Or are you just talking through your laptop mic? Because we can't hear a thing, and it looks like everything's working on our side, so it must be coming from you. Maybe Simpiwe can help you sort that out, but we can't hear you at all. Damn. All right. And let you try and figure that out again. Damn. Hate it when that happens. Yeah, okay. Let's just talk about this 16 days thing from a practical point of view. I feel like this is being used like so many other things are being used by politicians and by even by corporations who hop on the 16 days bandwagon to just cover them so that they can say we've done something or we are involved somewhere. We're seen to be doing something rather than we're doing something. Because we know, and I'm sure Mara will tell us in a moment or two, these things are not things that can be solved by government or by companies. They really can't. These things need to be solved at the family level. They need to be solved at the individual level. The men who are committing these acts of violence against women have serious psychological issues to unpack. They've often got, bad sort of backgrounds. They don't necessarily have happy homes that they come from. They're perpetuating that cycle of violence. It's stuff that we spoke to Charlie Peterson about the other day. And nobody wants to talk about that because it's not sexy. It's easier for a politician to get up and say, we've got these 16 days of activism. Now, I don't know who's done anything during 16 days of activism, but I'll guarantee you that the only stuff we'll see is the usual propaganda and not a whole lot of action. The people who are doing the work are doing it well beyond those 16 days of activism. They're working every day, people like Mara, to make a difference. And they're not getting the attention for 16 days, which is why we brought her on this morning. You agree?
And it's quite obvious, right? When the government or like a big brand is really just doing a campaign just to tick a box that, yeah, no, we did our part. And immediately after that 16 days, it's like back to reality. And Yatish, I like what you said, and I think I really appreciate your honesty about the fact that because it's so far away from you, you're not necessarily exposed to it all the time, and really you forget that it's even happening. Only when it comes closer to you do you actually realize that, oh crap, this is the reality. And it's that sad concept of we'll only freak out when it happens to our sister or our cousin or our aunt. But when we see something happening like on the timeline, like, oh, this and this happened to me, you question that person's truth and I guess their story. And what we're realizing now more and more, just to bring it sort of back to the whole Jup Jup and Amanda Dupont thing, is that women are coming out with their stories and their experience of GBV and sexual assault and the public at large is just generally like not believing anything and is literally accusing these people of making stories up. And it's almost as though your truth is no longer valid because of various reasons. Number one, why are you coming out so late with your story? Why didn't you report this to the police as soon as it happened? Or number two, why are you only responding to this now to attack the person? Are you trying to gain something out of it? So there's such a lack of education from the audience's side where it's like, sure, okay, cool. Some people do make false allegations. We get it. But there are more cases where that is not happening. There are more cases where these women are really experiencing these things and no justice is being served. So it is one of those tough conversations. I'm glad we've got Mara on today because the education aspect for me is just mind-blowing because it's missing. Oh, geez, Gareth, are you speaking now? We can't hear you.
No. There we go. So let's try one more time to get Mara back on. And Mara, hopefully you can speak to us now. Hello.
Man.
Still no. Still can't
Nothing.
hear you. I don't know what's going on there. Sorry, Mara, I don't know what we're going to do here. I'm going to have to let you go back to Simpiwe and we try and figure this out. Yeah, we could probably get you, except in the, no, it's not going to work on the phone. No, it's not going to work. All right. Listen, I want to ask you about something you just brought up now. This whole thing with Amanda Dupont and Jub Jub, and the fact that people are coming forward and telling their stories, which I think they need to do. There's no reason that anyone should suffer in silence. I think that there are serious issues around people who do make false allegations. We discussed that a little bit earlier on the show. It's a very touchy subject. But what happens in a situation where someone does make a false allegation is it has the effect of making all the real situations seem trivial, and it makes the trivial ones seem real. And I think that that does an enormous disservice to real victims. And any time, and there are people who, for various reasons, have throughout time tried to lay false allegations at the feet of men and women, frankly, and that doesn't help the situation. It almost has the opposite effect of what it's supposed to do. It's meant to, a lot of people say, make other women comfortable with telling their story. But what it does is it makes them look like they might also be making it up. So we've got to be super careful about this. There needs to be a consequence for people who make nonsense allegations. And I'm not saying in the Jub and Amanda DuPont case, I know anything, because I don't know a damn thing. I only discovered this story on Friday and I'm still kind of trying to get my head around it. But there also seems to be like a game that gets played where if things don't go the way that one of the people want, then they say that something has happened, which is criminal. Now, if it is criminal, it has to go to court. It has to be prosecuted. There's an ugly and lengthy process there. Makes it very, very difficult for the victim and obviously for the person who's accused. But there needs to be a process in place here. And if people are just going to make allegations on social media, for example, that also makes it seem trivial and silly. And gender-based violence is not trivial and silly. It's not something that should be arbitrated by nobodies on social media. And there are people who are saying, that Amanda's making things up in this case, or that Jub is being an asshole again because he's got a track record. But those people are just the peanut gallery. These are very serious things that need discussion. And it shouldn't be happening on social media.
I don't know. Gareth, social media can be used differently. And for somebody like Amanda DuPont, somebody like Jub, even somebody like McGee, these are people that are in the public eye. So they would use these platforms to speak on whatever they want to speak on, just generally because that's the nature of the industry that they're in and the position that they're in the industry. I completely understand why Amanda would go onto social media and record a video of herself explaining her trauma and her experience, because in the same way, what triggered this whole thing was that Jub was on a public platform. He was on McGee's podcast,
right,
speaking very flimsily about his encounters with Amanda, using really derogatory words like smash and, bang and whatever the case is. Whereas from her memory, they were in a 2-year relationship where he repeatedly raped her. So for her, you repeatedly raped me for 2 years. For him, I was smashing that. So, social media is the place where they would come and speak their sides of the story and try and, get their points across or whatever. I don't think it's the use of social media. I do agree, though, that, when you do put such sensitive information out there and it's open to the world, you will get some nonsense opinions. You will get rubbish comments from people that really don't matter. And the real sad thing is that most of these comments and most of these opinions are quite baseless. And you can tell these people that are commenting are so uneducated and kind of one-sided in their thinking. At no point, were people kind of like really dissecting both sides. It was almost just like Amanda,
I mean, also, because everybody's in everybody's business these days, it's like, and unfortunately what you're saying is like, in the case of both of these people, and everyone's talking about it, everyone has the right to talk about whatever they want, but this was all aired. People are airing their dirty laundry in public, so it's going to become a public conversation. What do you think of that, Yatish? I mean, it's so messy.
I mean, there's two sides to it, right? On the one hand, I buy what you're saying about going, it's super sensitive. People need to be mindful about accusing somebody if it's obviously not the case, and vice versa. But the other hand, I'm thinking, talking about it is such a new behavior that we're gonna get it wrong by talking about it, right? Somebody is gonna talk about it in the incorrect way or pick an incorrect medium to talk about it on. But unless we go through that pain of figuring out what's the right way to do it, what'll continue to happen is we won't talk about it. So then we'll never know. So I don't know. Part of me is going, maybe this just must run its course and we have to figure out what's the appropriate way to manage it and what you can and can't say. Because also, again, it's difficult for me to talk about it because it's just not my experience. But I can imagine someone who's been through it going, did that happen to me or didn't that happen to me? I'm not sure, you know? Ooh. And so by being exposed to lots of them, maybe yeah. starts to formulate an opinion and go, yeah, okay, this is worth talking about from my side.
Well, there's a point being made here, which I think is interesting by Lindiwe. Lindiwe says people could be in abusive marriages for years without reporting it. And we know that that happens, right? We know that there are people in quiet desperation all over the place. And I think it's probably worth taking into consideration that for many of those people, those go unreported, that kind of abuse, that kind of ugly domestic situation. We've also got to remember that the most scary thing that a lot of people don't want to confront about rape in South Africa is that it's not perpetrators of rape and victims who are unknown to each other. Those do occur, but it's a rare thing. Most of the gender-based violence and the rape and all the other associated ugliness and trauma is perpetrated by someone who is known to the victim.
Mm-hmm.
Right? These are not strangers. It's not someone walking on the street and suddenly breaking into your house and physically abusing you. And as horrible as that is, and it does happen, that's not the reality. That's how we picture it in our minds when we think of these things. But actually, it's the husband, the uncle, the cousin, the stepbrother, whoever it might be. Those are the people who are doing the damage. And these are not strangers. These are not like random, distant criminals who we can objectively look at and say, well, that's a bad person. These are the same people who say, I love you, and then hurt you. Yeah. That's something we've got to come to terms with.
Obviously, like unpacking the psychological reasons as to why a person would do that it really goes back to how a person was raised and their environment and how they were treated and. But the real scary thing is usually the reaction of the family once this has, you know, become a fact. I bring this up because I was speaking to a lady not so long ago who shared an experience from her childhood where there was like a grand uncle who would just rape all the girls. Everybody knew it. It was a known fact in the community, but nobody did anything about it. And when I was speaking to her, she was a little bit scared. She's like, if anybody hears me even speaking about this, I'll get shunned from the family because I'm not supposed to speak about this. We all know it. It's a fact. This is our grand uncle who does whatever he pleases to all the little girls in the family, but you're not allowed to speak about it. And that really scared me because, you know, the reaction from really the people that you trust, as you said, Gareth, it's the people that say, I love you. It's the people that should be taking care of you. They're the ones that are ultimately, by them keeping quiet, their silence is pretty loud. You know, they're letting this thing happen and nobody ends up standing up for you. And then you feel like, okay, maybe I should keep quiet. Maybe I shouldn't go to the police and report it. Maybe I shouldn't tell mom that stepdad is doing ABC. As a victim, you also just fall to silence because if the adults around you aren't doing anything about it, then who are you? Just a victim. And it's crazy because the cycle goes on and on and on. So on one end, hurrah to social media. It's giving people, you know, some sort of power in a sense to be able to speak up about their stories because in hopes of encouraging other people who have experienced the same things. But before social media, it was just like, yo, shut up and keep quiet and go on with your life with this trauma.
I'm going to try one more time to bring Mara in on this because, shame, I know she's been waiting and she's been ready and we did a test call with her and everything. Mara, can we try one more time? Hello. Oh, my God. Yeah. I'm so sorry. We were really looking forward to speaking to you, Mara. I don't know what to say. We've tried everything this morning. I'm going to let you go, and I promise you we'll catch up and we'll make up for this because I do want to hear about your foundation. They're called the Tears Foundation. And as I said earlier, they provide access to crisis intervention, advocacy, counseling, prevention, education services for those impacted by domestic violence, sexual child abuse. And I was really hoping to speak to her, but I'm so sorry. We're not going to be able to do that for whatever reason this morning. They do amazing stuff. They action all kinds of real change. They bring about dialogue, uncomfortable conversations. They encourage more men to participate in these conversations because often it's, as we said at the beginning, when I handed over to Lebung, it's women who are forced to carry this conversation and it shouldn't be. I mean, that's part of the problem. And there's stigma around why some women don't report sexual assaults. And I was hoping to talk to Mara about that too, but you've kind of hinted at some of that too this morning, Lebung.
Yeah, no, they really do a lot. It would be dope to have them back. I think what I really like about Tears is that they offer like support beyond just like, okay, we'll help you now with what you're dealing with, and then after this, like, peace out, go do your thing. They have like ongoing counseling, support groups, like a whole bunch of stuff that is literally free of charge. They've got like a 24/7 like free call line. If you don't have airtime, you can just pop in like a star 134 star type of thing. So really, they catering to, you know, the needs of these victims and the needs of the people that are generally exposed to this on the daily. Like, I can tell you in the townships, it's rife. It's rife. And as I said earlier, literally during lockdown and after COVID began, it just got bad because now people are stuck at home
Yeah, you're
with
stuck,
these
right?
guys. They're stuck. They can't leave the house. If your rapist is living in the same roof as you, you have to deal with him every single day in your face. Whereas before, you know, he could maybe go to work or she could go to work or whatever the case is. Now, this is your reality. So it did get bad. The numbers did go up. And again, it almost just seems like life continued and things do happen. COVID is still top of mind. Things are happening, blah, blah, blah. GBV is an everyday struggle more in this country than any other country. We are the capital of rape. That's
Okay,
crazy.
so this is why we have this show. Is this us? And what part of this do we have to face up to? And what part do we have to own? And how do we change it if it is us?
Yeah, and the thing, the thing I always, if you do think about this issue, the reality is statistically, to your point, Lebang, the rape capital of the world, and 99.9% of that is perpetrated by men, right? It's not like it's, so I find this these 16 days or whenever we do talk about the issue interesting, because we focus on the victim portion, right? We go, look, shame, this is happening to women and kids and blah blah blah, but yeah, we really talk about the elephant in the room, which is to say, look, for whatever reason, why is this a thing with men in our society, right? Why is it, why aren't we addressing it? If I think about the work Charlie's doing, right, to say Charlie was going, look, we sort of try to get a sense of why fathers aren't there. And we try to deal with that issue at that level, right? Which is to say, usually it's for whatever reason, and we're going to try to intervene. In a similar way, we talk so much about the victims and should they be reporting and should they be saying and should they be brave enough to take things on. But what about the perpetrators, right? Like, how much are we doing at the perpetrator level to say, should we be talking to boys at an early age? Should we be, I'm not sure. Again, I don't know, but it's. If it's such a systemic issue, as opposed to just thinking about how we support the victims, how are we trying to proactively get to the perpetrators, or yeah, I don't know,
Well,
sort of
also, I
talk to that
suppose
level.
we also got to talk about how there are men who protect other men. There are guys who will stand up, and frankly, women who protect perpetrators because it's their son or it's their brother or it's someone else. You know how people are. I don't think there are people who go around in society saying rape is good. Even the people who are doing it must know at some level it's bad. But there's something about our society that we excuse this kind of behavior when it's someone that we love. Or it's in our families, because clearly in South Africa, there are people who know this is going on and don't say anything. People who should be saying to these guys, hey, listen, this is not on. You can't keep getting away with this just because, you're the father of the house or because you're an elder in the community or whatever it might be. We know that that's part of the problem. And, there are moms who would never countenance the fact that their sons behave like this. That we need to address too. There's something, I don't know if it's a problem with us because of our traumatic past in South Africa and the fact that we've come from such a, that people are so emotionally broken. And that's no excuse, obviously, for individuals perpetrating bad behavior. But I think maybe there's a cultural part of this too that we need to address. And that's difficult to say.
Yeah. Again, where do you start, right? You can go all the way back to the household and the nature of the household. But on a bigger scale, it's definitely a cultural thing. And I can obviously only speak for my experience. And within the Black community, there's a saying that abantu bazothini, like bantu batlaring, what will people say? And I know this isn't just doesn't only exist in the Black community, but for how I've seen it, is that it's quite dangerous, because you end up protecting nonsense behavior, and you end up protecting these people out of fear of, if people found out that indeed this is what's happening behind closed doors in our family, then we'll get judged or we'll get shunned or whatever the case is. And unfortunately, due to all of our traumatic experiences and all the emotional hurt and trauma and the stuff from the past that nobody has healed from, by the way, we just continue these cycles, and we carry these things that we've learned, and we just do it from generation to generation, versus unlearning certain things and saying, hey, you know what? If something is bad, we have to call it out. Call a spade, even if it's your brother, your mother, your sister, your cousin. If it's you, you have to be able to call it out. And we live in fear to a certain extent of like, abantu bazothini, you know, what will they say if they find out the truth about me and the truth about our family, and we need to uphold our reputation. And that is sad, because these victims and these perpetrators grow up and do the same thing with their own children and their children's children, and then, and then, and then.
Well, Global Cut Unfiltered says, it's truly a sensitive issue. It should be taken seriously. We as the public should not jump to conclusions, because sadly, sometimes it is a false accusation. Ricey Beck says, he's a convicted, this is obviously Jub Jub, he's a convicted criminal, case closed. No room for any argument from that one. we are talking about the issue at hand. Come on, Amanda is a married woman. That's another part of this, you know. That needs to be unpacked. And Lindiwe says, if it has happened close to home, you wouldn't understand the psychological trauma. And maybe, for all we know, Lindiwe is speaking from experience. I hope not. And I just want to say at the end of this, because we've got to wrap it up, if you are a woman who has dealt with this, who is dealing with this, there are loads of people like Mara, who I'm so sorry we couldn't speak to today, who are doing incredible work to make it just a little bit more bearable, who can help you get out of these situations. There are safe houses. There are organizations like Power who are doing all the hard work to make it possible for you to break out of a cycle that you shouldn't be in, that you don't deserve, that is not your fault. And I'm talking to you as an individual now. I'm not talking South African women. I'm not talking government. I'm not talking the Department of Women, Children, and People with Disabilities, or any of that stuff. I'm saying, if it's happening to you, please, there are people who can help you. There are people who care. There are people who will hold your hand through the process. You do not have to face this on your own. And it's going to take a huge amount of courage for you to break out of that. But this is why we're talking about it this morning, to give you hope, to give you a way out. You do not need this in your life, and you don't deserve it, and you don't have to put up with it.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all we can say this morning. I'm sorry we couldn't get Mara on, guys. I really wanted to hear what she had to say. Yeah, Tish, thanks for joining us. I'm glad that you're feeling better, because you had the vid, didn't you?
I did. The latest version.
Oh, man. Omicron. Is it worse or is it better?
It's a cold. Fortunately, it's a cold. If I didn't know, if it wasn't called Omicron, I would have had two panados and carried on. But yeah,
there we go. All right, everybody. We will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. bright and early. Cheers.
Thanks. CliffCentral.com.